Hi, everyone, and welcome to today's podcast. I'm Caleb Meese, one of the policy officers at the Council of Deans of Health, and I'm joined today by Lisa Taylor, Associate Professor in Occupational Therapy and Associate Dean of Employability for the Faculty of Medicine and Health at the University of East Anglia, and Professor Gilly Salmon, CEO and Principal Consultant at Educational Alchemists. We are here today for a special podcast as part of what we are calling the Council's Innovation Fortnight, where we have been showcasing some of the best examples of innovation for placements within healthcare education. To that front, Lisa and Jilly will be talking about their peer-enhanced e-placement project. Without further ado, I'll bring in Lisa and ask, can you tell me why the peer-enhanced e-placement was created and a little bit of background to what it is?
Yeah, thanks, Caleb, for the introduction. The peer-enhanced e-placement, which we'll refer to as PEEP, was initially an emergency response to placements being cancelled due to COVID. But what we've found since is that it provided emergent properties and demonstrated an innovation in placement delivery that hadn't necessarily been explored previously. So it is an online placement delivered to students using a virtual learning environment or a platform such as Blackboard or MS Teams or something like that, where students still work towards their usual placement learning outcomes, but they work in their peer groups and work their way through their caseload or case scenarios or whatever it is that is the content of their PEEP together in their peer groups, but also individually. So they get the benefits of moving between individual learning and peer group learning. So yeah, it started off as an emergency response, but I've worked with Professor Gilly Salmon since, and we've developed it, and is now widely recognised as a placement innovation.
Thanks, Lisa. And Professor Jilly, can you tell me how and why you got involved in the PEEP?
Yes, absolutely. As you heard, Lisa did this emergency response initially for her own students. But fortunately, she had a lot of background, some seminal backgrounds in the area. And she wanted to know essentially why it worked, you know, although she'd spent all of her Easter holiday on it, I think, both doing the design and the delivery with colleagues. Nearly all, in fact, I think it was all bar one of the students did achieve the learning outcomes. And there was a buzz about it that was really quite unexpected. Fortunately, she was put in touch with me because my long-term work is about research and practice and understanding and interpreting how students behave when they are in remote environments. Some listeners might have heard of the five-stage model and activities, and particularly the five-stage model, which is a scaffold enabling students to be comfortable, collaborative, and really focusing on what's they're needing to learn, despite the fact they're not in actual contact with each other. And she did have both synchronous and asynchronous activities and a very strong timetable that indicated the scaffold. So a short answer to that was she was using seminal processes that had stood the test of time and had been thoroughly researched to interpret and understand. And we just started working then on building a model from this, because we realised that we'd got hold of something that others were in desperate need of because of the massive logjam on placements at the time. So I think by then we were somewhere around May 2020. And we started to think, OK, how can we help others to do this without going through quite this amount of pain?
I think all of our listeners will identify with those kind of massive backlogs in placements, especially sort of early in the pandemic. Just to continue on that point a little bit, so you were speaking sort of about the initial developments, but have there been sort of other major developments since those sort of first emergency beginnings, you might call it?
Oh, Lisa, do you want to go?
Well, I was just going to build on what you've already said, Gillian, the fact that I obviously approached you around your five stages of learning model, which seemed to really map onto what the students had reported. And as you said, you know, ears were pricking up about the PEEP in that it might be offering something not only for during the pandemic, but also beyond the pandemic, because obviously this placement logjam has been occurring for quite some time before COVID as well, and is existing and potentially increasing with student numbers, etc., after this as well. So we knew we needed to translate the original PEEP into an easily accessible model for others to be able to consider adapting and adopting for themselves. So Julie and I worked on developing what we call the PEEP acquisition experience, which offers those teams of individuals, either academics or placement teams, or those in clinical practice, or actually both academics and placement clinicians working together, to be able to come and learn more about the PEEP, that pedagogical underpinning, the evidence that really underpins the delivery of a PEEP, the timetable structure that supports that learning journey for the students, but also it's also then start to translate that and adapt it for their own students based on what their learning outcomes, their specific learning outcomes are for their students. So that's when we developed this PEEP acquisition experience. I've worked with over 60 placement teams across health and social care professions over the last 18 months.
Perfect, thanks. Lisa, Chili, did you want to come in on that at all?
No, I mean, it was wonderful, actually, because most people came to it thinking it wasn't possible to do this. And certainly the reassurance came from saying you must start with what your learning outcomes have to be, obviously, in a professional area. And people were super nervous. And I kind of get that, because the way, you know, we've done sort of practice-based learning forever has been in the workplace. So we were very sympathetic to that. However, in addition to demonstrating that very good design of online working can replace some placements, and the students were meeting some extraordinary outcomes, like clinical reasoning was better, and the ease of being able to work across multiple disciplines, of being able to extend the curriculum, so they could do things that just simply wouldn't have been possible in the regular environments. And then we started to notice that the peer enhancement they were actually developing as professionals and their ability to talk to others was improving. So there was extraordinary things coming out of this. But we were sympathetic that people had to adapt it and adopt it for themselves in order to do this. So it kind of developed throughout the whole, if you like. And we then, I mean, and to say the acquisition experience, of course, that was all done remotely. And so in some ways, they were becoming online learners themselves, the staff that we were working with, and experiencing it for themselves, as well as minute by minute throughout the workshops, working out what they were going to do with it and how it would work. And of course, what's happened since then, we've been lucky, we've been able to research and some of the stats Lisa's already reported.
Perfect. Thanks for that. I think that sort of speaks to some of the wider themes that listeners might be getting throughout the series of podcasts, and sort of this new era of practice placements, what developed out of COVID, but also what can be sort of learned going forward from that. We don't have to go back to the previous era. We can sort of take the positives going forward.
So we do hope that will be the case, very much so. That is our hope for PEEP going forward, that it is one example of, you know, coming, if you like, crossing the chasm from that emergency response to real quality and sustainability.
Certainly, yeah. You know, the whole ethos of placements are that you're able to put theory into practice. And I think what the PEEP does do, students have reported time and time again, it's a safe space to make that translation of theory into practice. Whereas sometimes within a face-to-face environment, they can feel a little bit timid of doing that, the fear of being constantly assessed, or feeling as if they can't interrogate or question or challenge people. But what the students have reported is, and also the staff have been involved with the PEEP as well, who have supervised the students, they've said that the students have described this safe space that they have interrogated in themselves, which has then resulted in this more in-depth professional and clinical reasoning, because they've had that time to consolidate their knowledge, reflect, go back to their peer group and say, well, why are you doing that in that way? To observe their peer groups in live interactions with service users, or to immerse themselves in that themselves with their peers watching them. And that all of that experience, I think, just enlightens those placement learning outcomes in slightly different ways to what it would be within the face-to-face environment. As Julie says, we're not saying PEEP replaces face-to-face placements at all. What we're saying is you do need those face-to-face clinical placements, but what PEEP does offer an opportunity to replace an element of some of those placements with an opportunity to really target the learning for students. So this year with our students, we were able to offer the students the opportunity to manage cases that all of our students would love to do, but where we are geographically, we don't have the access to those clinical areas for all of the students. So we're able to actually give the students the opportunity to experience those quite niche areas. But all of the students were able to experience that. We've had other professions, diagnostic radiographers, for example, have said that their students are very good at learning to position patients to be able to take the films. But a team did a gap analysis really on their placements and realised actually the students were very getting the accurate films in the right place. Weren't necessarily getting the chance to review those and going through those. So then their PEEP was designed around those elements as well. I've had other professions who have found that they prefer more of a scenario-based rather than case-based approach. So that suits their profession and their professional requirements too, because as we've said, it's the PEEP needs to be built around those individual placement outcomes, which have already been validated by the professional body to ensure that they fulfil the professional standards as well. So what we have found is something that did emerge as something that was delivered entirely by academics using the academics' clinical specialties has now developed into something that can be delivered by both academics and clinical partners, linking them via videos into working directly with service users, but also flexibility in the content of the PEEPs to ensure you're targeting as to what your students' specific learning needs are or specific placement limitations you have from a geographical basis. You can then offer students a greater breadth of learning than otherwise would be ordinarily accessible in the face-to-face offering.
Thanks, Lisa. It sounds like a lot of sort of flexibility in the PEEP, and sort of accordingly, a lot of positive sort of feedback in terms of the multi-professional approach, but also from both the sort of educators and the student side. To sort of flip the equation a little bit, obviously everybody faced very difficult circumstances, both sort of pandemic and other related. Were there any specific challenge or was there a specific challenge or any specific challenges specifically that you want to know in terms of the PEEP?
I'll have a bit of a go at that, and Lisa might add, it's Jilly here. My work, in addition with PEEP, is I'm currently working with over 20 universities, both in the UK and around the world, who are definitely trying to get the most out of the extraordinary and often tragic circumstances that we've had throughout the pandemic, and to try and emerge from that with some positives for their educational provision. And of course, it is absolutely devastatingly difficult. I mean, everyone is used to face-to-face, you know, right from the time you first hold a newborn baby, you look it in the eye and it looks at you. And then as you go through your educational experience, in a way, the actual physical environment, the physical architecture does so much of that for you, that we know how to behave. And that clearly happens when people are in clinical placements. So we shouldn't beat ourselves up that this is a very difficult transition. But it is important for people to know that time needs to be spent on allowing people to understand and make that transition, and to offer them frameworks and models that we know will take them a long way to making the online experience just as good, and to give them the chance to trial it, to try it, make it their own. So this is not about training people or insisting that they're being resistant. It's very much about saying, look, this has worked for us in all sorts of ways. It has benefits such as accessibility, scalability, and so on. And that's what's needed in the transformation. And I think that's all of our responsibility now. In the coming year or two, I think that's what people bring to that mix, as people seek to actually recognise that, you know, health is going to be a digital environment largely in future, and we have a responsibility to help our staff and students benefit from that. Sorry, bit of a speech there. That was it from me.
That's fine, of course.
Yeah, I would add to that as well, Gillian, the fact that you sort of say about the pivot that is required in order to appreciate something that has always been traditionally delivered face-to-face, and how some of that benefit can be replicated online and potentially offer additional benefits to you know, work alongside what students have learned in the face-to-face environment. There is a recognition it does take time to get a PEEP organised, and that's something that some people came saying, this seems to be the answer to what we need, but the reason we want the PEEP is because we're, you know, we haven't got time, etc. So there is a little bit of a paradox there, but there is recognition from those people who have put the time aside to design their PEEPs, is that once it has been designed well once, which is what the acquisition experience does, yes, the PEEP offers you lots of flexibilities to adapt it, but there are those core principles that are in there to make sure that it's that quality learning experience for the students. But what people have found is when they have invested that time to get that design right, that you design it once and can deliver it multiple times. So we're hearing from people who are now on their third or fourth PEEP that they've now delivered. And they've delivered it, and then their friends in the next department have heard about it. And so they've now got, you know, multiple professions within their universities now doing it. So there is a recognition it takes time, but it takes time to get face-to-face placements organised as well, that isn't necessarily explicit. There are other benefits obviously to the PEEP around students not having to travel there and back. There's, you know, we talked about sustainability. It's not just sustainability as a model in the fact that you design it once and can then deliver it multiple times, but there is that sort of environmental sustainability as well, that PEEP does offer, alongside those other sort of quality learning gains as well. So yeah, I think there is that change that can be a challenge, understandably so, but also the challenge around the time initially that does need to be set apart. We've got a record, haven't we, Gilly, about a team that came on the PEEP acquisition experience one Monday, had set some time aside during that week for the placement team to work on it. By the following Monday, their occupational therapists were on their PEEP. So, yeah, it is possible to turn around it quite quickly.
I hope all the deans listening have heard Lisa's message on that one. little bit of consideration of the time. He doesn't necessarily need funding as such, because you know, we use the regular virtual learning environment. It doesn't need fancy technology, but it does need space for people to learn how to do it. So
I think where
all
the
deans listening, hopefully you'll hear that.
Yeah. I think where the funding does come in is when you deliver it, and the placement tariff now, certainly from Health Education England's point of view, I know it's going to be slightly different in the other areas of the UK, but certainly Health Education England now reflect in their tariff model, such as PEEP, to ensure that there is that sort of support for the staff who are delivering the PEEP, whether that's the academic staff, etc. as well.
Perfect. Thanks, Lisa. I guess I'll sort of ask one final question for this session, and you guys have already been alluding to it, but it's kind of just what are the next steps for this project for you guys, for the PEEP, and I guess I'll add on a little bit to say, are there sort of specific steps that, if they would be overcome, would allow for a major expansion, and you know, are there individual things where you can say, if this was sorted, we'd be able to move forward quicker?
So I'll start, and I'm sure Gilly can add something when I've started the answer of the question. I think our next plans are, we're already researching the PEEP and the PEEP acquisition experience, to make sure, again, we want to understand that process of learning for those people who've attended the PEEP and participated in it. And also start to evaluate some of the student learning as well. Other participants have gone and completed their PEEPs and have evaluated that too. So what we're wanting to do is build the evidence base, because there seems to be a consistent message coming back anecdotally, as well as these individual pockets of evaluation that have been completed as well. So recently heard about a nursing evaluation that come back really, really positively. Operating department practitioner PEEP has come back really positively, orthoptists. So we're getting it across multiple professions as well. So we want to build the evidence base and to further support the PEEP, and, you know, further give people confidence in it as a model. What we're also wanting to do is continue the rollout and the scaling of the PEEP to more than we have already, really. And I suppose just thinking about some of the block perhaps that some people are feeling is trying to make it as efficient as possible as to how the PEEP can be delivered. So the operating department practitioners, we worked with them on a national funded project to contextualise the PEEP for their profession. And one of the action points from that was to try and develop central repositories of resources for ODP PEEPs, to try and make the sort of organisation of a PEEP a bit more efficient. So I would imagine some sort of central repository of information would help the efficiencies with the organisation. But I'll hand over to Gilly, because I'm sure she'll want to add some bits to the answer as well.
Yes, I mean, we're thinking that possibly there might be another batch of people wanting to try the PEEP experience, which we're going to continue to offer in 2022, either for different professions or to explore in a bit more depth all the research that we've got now that we didn't have at the beginning. I think the policy to practice area is also very interesting, because, you know, as people start to realise that this is a hugely beneficial way of addressing the log jams, which are likely to increase, not decrease, within increasing student numbers, and also the added value towards sort of telehealth and digital organisations and so on. So we think that, you know, we will actually do a bit more, I think, in the acquisition experiences on that. And then certainly, I mean, I'm looking for a little bit of funding so I can do some impact analysis to look at the wider system in that sense. So there's plenty more to go for 18 months in.
Perfect. I think with that, I will bring this podcast to an end. I'd like to thank all of our audience for tuning in and listening to us today. I'd also, of course, want to thank Lisa and Jilly for joining me today to talk about their project, the PEEP project. I think it's been very informative, and I'm certain that all of our audience will have enjoyed listening today. Please do make sure to listen to the other podcasts as part of our Innovation Fortnight, and to read through the blogs for Innovation Fortnight as well. That'll all be easily accessible on the Council of Deans of Health website. So take care, have a good rest of the day, and bye-bye for now.